If the thoughts in my head could reach a great distance and somehow get into your mind, they would tell you much more than all the words I could speak from now till the end of time. Lady, now, are you a lady? Do you like the one your beauty's been sold to? How does it feel?
Was Meg Christian, and this is J.D. Doyle and Queer Music Heritage. I've been wanting to do a tribute show to Meg for a long time, and now I have what I think is some special material to share with you. For those of you who do not know, Meg Christian is one of the pioneers of the women's music movement. She and Chris Williamson were among the founders of the Olivia Records label, and the success of releases by both of them could be said to have brought women's music into its golden age. The very first recording released by Olivia was a 45 RPM record with Chris Williamson singing If It Weren't for the Music on one side, and the other side being the Jerry Goffin and Carole King song Lady, sung by Meg. As it turned out, neither of those recordings would appear on any Meg or Chris albums, so this is a rare 45. Again, I open with Meg Christian singing Lady from 1974. And the first album on Olivia was by Meg, also in 1974, and it was called I Know You Know. And it would include such fan favorites as Joanna, Valentine's Song, and the classic Ode to a Gym Teacher. She would go on to release three other studio albums, Face the Music in 1977, Turning It Over in 1981, and From the Heart in 1984. And of course, the beloved live album, Meg and Chris at Carnegie Hall, was recorded in November of 1982, with that album coming out early the following year. And that was it for her Olivia Records output. Around 1983, she decided to devote her time to spirituality, and it's been many, many years since she has done a radio interview. I did request one a few years ago and got a polite no thank you. So I wasn't sure how I could make a show like this, a much-deserved tribute to Meg's music, without it being just my playing her songs and talking. Until I got the special material I'm going to share with you. But I don't like to talk too long without playing some music. So before I tell you what's special about this show, here's one of my favorite Meg songs from 1977, Face the Music.
Whether it's a love song or only lonely blues, woman, you know you've gotta face the music. Woman, you know you got to face the music. Feeling your way through your fears and your fancies, hoping for blessing to ease the bruising, and still you know you choose to face the music. Face the music, though you can't be too wary, for it leads you on a merry dance. It's just a chance you gotta take. Though it cost you dearly, face the music. You got to face the music, for it leads you on a merry dance. You only owe it what you give it. It only happens as happily as you live it. This could be your last move right where you are. Oh yes it could. It could also be your best. I would say that there's a piper who must be paid. You either give your coins away, oh yes you do, or you pick up your pipes and play. Whether it's a love song or only lonely blues, woman, you know you've gotta face the music. Woman, you know you got to face the music. Feeling your way through your fears, feeling your way through, hoping for blessing, ease of bruising, and still you know you choose to face the music. Face the music, though you can't be too wary. You've got to face the music. It's a tune you can carry for it.
My QMH show was aired monthly by the show Queer Voices on KPFT-FM in Houston, and Pokey Anderson, a friend I've known for many years, was host of the lesbian feminist show Breakthrough on that station for 11 years, until 1992. Accordingly, she has an extensive collection of women's music, and in fact, she was the source of my prized copy of that first Olivia 45. On one of my tours of her collection, I noticed a tape of a radio interview she and co-host Cherry Wolfe did with Mae Christian on April 29, 1983. So, of course, I just had to borrow and copy that tape, and it's excellent. I figure if I can't bring you my own interview with Meg, I'll bring you an historical one done at the time period when she was about to leave women's music for her spiritual calling. So she talks about women's music, the Meg and Chris at Carnegie Hall concert, her alcoholism, and how overcoming that led to her following the teachings of a Siddha yoga guru. And I tell you, listening to Meg talk is a delight. And I have a second way to make this segment special. KPFT is a Pacifica station, and accordingly, I have access from time to time to material held in the Pacifica Archives in Los Angeles. A few weeks ago, I noticed a new addition there, a 1981 concert by Mae Christian, backed up by Diane Lindsay. It's an hour long, and I think it is wonderful, and it's of radio quality, something you cannot always count on. The concert was an outdoor one, held in Northern California, in the Bay Area, probably in the early fall of 1981, as she mentions the just-released Turning It Over album. While I do not know for sure, it may have been recorded by the folks at KPFA in Berkeley. So I'm going to work in songs from the concert in between the 1983 interview comments. The voices you will hear talking with her will be Pokey Anderson and Cherry Wolfe. And we start off talking about the Carnegie Hall concert.
You were just in Carnegie Hall, a mere 6 months ago.
God, was it that long? I feel like Carnegie was part of my life for so long. We were planning it at least a year, probably a year and a half before it happened. Well, the record just came out the 1st of April. Mm-hmm. So it has been a constant presence in my life all that time, since even before we did the Turning It Over album.
When the idea came up, were you involved in that? Did somebody just laugh and go, oh, yeah, sure, Carnegie Hall?
Something like that. The woman who produced my Turning It Over album, Betty Rowland, said to me one day when we were doing some planning stuff about Turning It Over, you know what? You all ought to take women's music to Carnegie Hall. And I said, oh, Betty. And she said, no, I'm serious. And, you know, oh, Betty, ha-ha. And she had called the Olivia office and given the same notion. And we all just sort of chuckled and said, oh, Betty, that's cute. And before we knew it, Betty had called up Carnegie Hall and said, when's the first time you've got an opening? So she was serious about it. And she pushed the idea through even before we were ready to accept the outrageous wonderfulness of the idea. And by the time we had the thing booked, we were all sort of walking around the office saying, you know, we could really do this. This could really happen. This is the most outrageous idea we ever had. And it was, besides the idea of starting Olivia in the first place, which was fairly outrageous. It was an amazing experience. And, you know, the Carnegie people were just as nice and supportive as they could be the whole time through. There was never a question in their minds about whether we should be there. They heard the music. You know, what you have to do when you apply to perform at Carnegie is that you have to submit the music, an idea of the music, so they can get an idea if it's consistent with their quality standards. Mm-hmm. And they were totally supportive from the word go. And as a matter of fact, I have to tell you this because I think it's so wonderful. The stage people, the union people who run the Carnegie House, have been in that job for 400 years. It's one of those things, it's like the monarchy, you know, it gets passed down from, of course, father to son, basically. And these old guys have seen everybody, you know, they've seen it come and go and nothing fazes them. And after the Carnegie concert, they were so excited. They were running around like chickens with their heads cut off, telling us what a wonderful show it was. And I thought that was pretty impressive, you know, because they were the kind that wouldn't have been easily moved by anything. Fortunately, it's all captured on this album, and I think the album is a real treasure. It's a photographic and oral history of the evening, and it was a real special event.
Let's hear some music from the album Meg and Chris at Carnegie Hall. I picked the opening track, Anniversary.
Please welcome Meg Christian and Chris Williamson. We'll be right back.
How was it working with Chris Williams? And you, when it first came up, I thought, no, their voices are so different. How will it ever work?
They blend pretty well, don't they?
Yeah.
Well, you know, Chris and I used to do concerts together in 1973 and 4 in D.C. Chris was the first woman that I ever heard perform music that I just knew was coming from the same place my music was. In her deepest heart, you know, I knew it was woman-identified music, and I knew it was coming from a very deep, common place. Also, when I first heard Chris in 72, her voice just killed me. What can I tell you? I'd never heard a voice that I had liked more in my life. And I just fell in love with her music and her voice and knew that I wanted to make music with her. So we did. And it's interesting because our voices are quite different, and yet we do blend amazingly well. So I hadn't worked with Chris in a long time. She had done the Turning It Over album with me. So it was very wonderful. When we get together and do music, you know, whatever's different in our personalities and our styles and everything just kind of disappears. And I think we both find great delight in performing together.
What does Olivia and Meg and Chris do after they do Carnegie Hall?
You rest a lot. Well, Chris and I going on tour, God, in another couple of weeks. There's no way to try to top it, you know. It was a thing in itself, and so what's going to happen with me this year is that we do this tour, and then I'm going to take the summer and finish working on some songs and working on some preparations for a solo album. I'll tour in the fall, and then I'll do my next solo album in probably November and December.
And that album just mentioned would be From the Heart, the last album of original material Meg would release for Olivia in 1984. And I would not dare do a show on Meg Christian without her classic song, Ode to a Gym Teacher.
Showed me being female meant you still could be strong. And though graduation meant that we had to part, she'll always be a player on the ball field of my heart. I wrote her name on my notepad and I inked it on my dress. And I etched it on my locker and I carved it on my desk. And I painted big red hearts with her initials on my books. And I never knew till later why I got those funny looks. She was a big tough woman, the first to come along, that showed me being female meant you still could be strong. And though graduation meant that we had to part, she'll always be a player on the ball field of my heart. Well, in gym class, while the others talked of boys that they loved, I'd be thinking of new aches and pains a teacher had to rub. And while other girls went to the prom, I languished by the phone, calling up and hanging up if I found out she was home. She was a big time woman, the first to come along, that showed me being female meant you still could be strong. And though graduation meant that we had to part, she'll always be a player on the ball field of my heart. I sang her songs by Johnny Mathis. I gave her everything. A new chain for her whistle and some daisies in the spring. Some suggestive points for Christmas by Miss Edna Millay. And a lacy, lacy, lacy card for Valentine's Day. Unsigned, of course. She was a big time woman. Sticks to teacher like a leaf sticks to a tree. One girl who runs the errands and who chases all the balls. One girl who may grow up to be the gayest of all.
I'm sure there must be one person out there listening that doesn't know what Olivia Records is and all that stuff. Why don't you give them the 25-word spiel?
Olivia Records is a national women's recording company that was founded in 1973. And our aims were to create good jobs that women could feel like they had some comfort and control in, and training in areas that it's hard to get training in. And put out a product that was really useful to women's lives. We had the idea of a business long before we had the idea of what the product was going to be. And music seemed to be the obvious answer. Because in our, at that point, limited experience with women's music, we had seen how starved we were for music that told us the truth about our lives. For music that we didn't have to change the words or wish the second verse wasn't there or feel like that what the songs were saying were somehow giving us a limited picture of ourselves or a stereotype picture that didn't really fit who we were. Anyone who has listened to popular music has probably felt like, I'm more interesting than that. I'm more whole and well-rounded than that. And for me, women's music has been an attempt to fill in the gaps, to give us a fuller, more complete, more complex picture of what women feel and think and how we connect with one another, particularly. So that's what Olivia has been up to, and for the past 10 years we have had our ups and downs and tried to learn how to do it right, to make a stable business and a successful business and take care of ourselves at the same time. And it's been quite a journey. Nearly killed us sometimes. But that's another thing I wanted to say about Carnegie, which was exciting to me, was that it turned out to be not just a celebration, I think, of Olivia's 10 years, but I feel like that every woman was there got a chance to sit and think about what she has done in the last 10 years. And what women have accomplished has been unbelievable and very profound, and I think more important than any of us realize. I think we've done remarkable, courageous, exciting things in the past 10 years, and that we all deserve to sit back and congratulate ourselves tremendously for that.
And as promised, here's a track from that live concert from 1981, and it's a song you won't find on any Mae Christian album, called You Bet, but it's okay that she sings it, as she co-wrote it with Holly Near, and the song can be found on Holly's album, Imagine My Surprise.
This is kind of an old one. And I do dearly hope that you will sing with us. Diane is so versatile, she plays the piano and the bass. Sometimes simultaneously. Are you ready, Diane? For all of you.
If I only had an hour, I'd spend it with the women who sing to me. Sweet melodies of women, loving songs with room for growing that show us where we're going so caringly. They dare me to grow up. With the women who live the lives, the fighting lives, the lives that inspire the songs of women working, fighting for our senses courageously, preparing me for battles that are yet to be won. Sing it for me. Change. There lies revolution. Our everyday lives, the changes inside become our political songs. You bet I sing love songs, songs to carry me along. songs of mother love, songs of my lover love, singing the songs of love in myself. Singing the songs of loving myself, start with myself, teaching myself, changing myself, oh, loving myself, ooh, ooh, loving myself.
In this next section of the interview, Meg talks about her alcoholism.
One of the you talked about talking to your audience about where you are.
Many people think that you are born with a tendency towards it. Mm-hmm. That can mean that you can't ever really drink without losing control of your drinking. But what it's important for me to share is that for years and years I drank because I thought that any woman who had her eyes open and saw what was going on in the world had to be crazy to go through this world sober. Mm-hmm. No, I used it as I drank at the world, and I drank at my pain and my oppression, and I used it as an excuse to kill myself. It was so ironic, and I know so many women who have done this, that we spend all our time going out there fighting forces that are trying to kill us out in the world, and then we just go home and do it ourselves, you know. Don't you all bother, I'll take care of it. It wasn't entirely consistent with my idea of a of a revolution that would include us all. And the other thing that I drank about was that the women's movement, when I first got involved, gave me a political analysis of my oppression, which was real important because I never understood it before. I never understood why I felt so terrible and so out of it and alienated. And women told me, okay, Meg, now you can be strong, you can be free, you can be powerful, you can be whole. And you can get rid of all that old self-hate and all that guilt that you never knew where it came from because you weren't Barbie. And you can get rid of that feeling of passivity, of helplessness. And I said, thank you very much. And I went out into the world absolutely determined to be all those things that I always wanted to be. But I couldn't do it. I couldn't fit this new model that I had for myself of the strong, independent Amazon. I could partially. I don't want to, paint a distorted picture. I experienced a feeling of wholeness and power and freedom that I had never had before. I mean, it's when you have gone from feeling all your life like you were alone to suddenly having a huge support group telling you you're okay and that you can live out your life choices. It was exhilarating, to say the least, and it changed my life. But there was still a very large part of me that felt like I was faking it out there when I stood up on stage and said, hey, you can be strong. And inside, I still felt weak and self-hating. And like I wasn't living up to what I was preaching. That kind of tension that happened inside when I felt like I wasn't being what I now, there was no excuse not to be, increased my self-hate and increased my drinking. I almost drank myself to death, which was really ironic because at the time that I finally realized what a dangerous situation I was in, Olivia was healthy and strong. I was getting a tremendous amount of support for my music. I was in a very enviable place, and I just hated myself. And I used that as an excuse to just keep drinking. Mostly, though, it was that my body couldn't control alcohol. Once I started drinking, I couldn't really control my drinking. And I didn't realize this. I didn't understand it, you know. One belief that I had was that any woman who was working really responsibly and politically did not have time, or I had no right to take vacations, to take the weekend off, to get therapy. God forbid anybody should try spirituality. I mean, to me, that was just the worst. waste of time, you know. To me, spirituality was women running up and around on the mountain having orgies and getting drunk. I was absolutely intolerant of any kind of self-help, self-healing process. So the idea of getting help for my drinking was not an option. I mean, forget it. Mm-hmm. I had to do it myself. I had to somehow figure out how to stop, and I couldn't do it. It's a disease. You know, you don't somehow figure out how not to have cancer or diabetes. Mm-hmm. So finally, when I hit bottom, it was a few months before we did the Face the Music album in 1977. And thank God there was a women's alcoholism recovery program in Los Angeles. And I went, and I found out that I, not only did I not have to stop drinking alone, I couldn't. And I needed help. And this was the place I got it. And they told me that I had to change my life. It was very simple, you know. Yes, you can stay sober and you can stay alive as long as you're willing to change your entire life, to change your attitudes. You've got to get well physically, and you've got to get well emotionally, and you've got to get well spiritually, which really freaked me out. I said, you know, you mean G-O-D, do you? And they said, just think of something that makes sense to you, something bigger than you. You know, if you want to call it the great goddess, if you want to call it cosmic energy, if you want to call it the universe, try to develop some kind of relationship with a power greater than yourself. And immediately it started changing my life. I realized that I was developing a way to go through the world that didn't need to drink, that didn't need to run to the bottle whenever things got scary. That was the turning point for me. It sounds so simple, but I didn't get it for a long time.
Sounds like a good time for another song from the live concert called Turning It Over.
Summer is fading, the wind's a little cold. I feel the seasons as they're turning in my soul. And I'm feeling kind of lonely, but I'm mainly okay. I'm just all I can handle at the moment, feeling my changes, feeling my pain, turning it over. Such a relief to let go of the reins. I'm turning it over again. Trying to save you, trying to please. I nearly tore up your house looking for my own keys. Now I'll clean up all my mess and I'll go on my way. And I'm all I can take at the moment, turning the corner, turning the key, turning it over to the one who can run it without any help from me. I'm turning it over again. Revolutions slowly stream me out and draw me in. Oh, one thing's for certain, one thing's for sure, I just cannot fight with anybody anymore. That old righteous
tremendous anger just ate me to the core. And all I have left are these moments for turning for comfort, turning to friends, turning it over. Keep taking it back, then I have to do it all again. Keep coming back. Oh, our revolutions slowly spin me out and draw me in. I'll read the morning paper, I play my guitar, music. I wonder how you are, and I'm afraid of my freedom, but my running days are done. So I start to sit still in my moments, sitting through changes, sitting through pain. Look in the mirror and finding a friend, turning it over. Takes so much practice, but it's making me sane. So I'm turning it over and over and over again and again.
While your song was playing, we were talking a little bit about spirituality. You're staying at the Houston Ashram.
Right.
Right. And last night you played them a few songs and stuff. How did it go?
Oh, it was wonderful. It was great. There were some women who came who had never been to the ashram before, which is basically it's a meditation center. Mm-hmm. It teaches a form of meditation that I've been doing myself for a little over a year. And I was very pleased that there were women who came there to hear the concert, and because it's such a delight for me to be able to share my experiences with this technique that has made such a tremendous difference in my life over the past year. There are a jillion different ways to meditate, and I've tried a bunch of them. This one, which is called Siddha meditation, is the one that happens to have worked for me. Don't ask me why. You know, there are so many different kinds, and basically the point of meditation is to still your mind, is to give your mind a rest, and to get in touch with something that's deeper inside you, that goes beyond thoughts and words and emotions, which to me is like getting in touch with the part of me that is part of this larger consciousness. And somehow, the more often I get in touch with that part of me, that deeper part of me, the more peaceful I feel, the less prone to getting upset, the clearer, the happier, the more loving I feel. And that's why I think, for me, learning to meditate, which always had kind of, you know, weird connotations, it was one of those things that I never considered was an option for me. It was just too politically incorrect, or, you know. It was to me like joining the Elks Club or something. You know, it's like, not an option for me, no. But when I tried it, it worked so instantly that I couldn't really quibble with it. I really do have an investment now in feeling more peaceful and feeling more centered. My work goes better. I feel like I can relate to people more out of love than out of anger. And that, to me, work that comes out of love rather than anger is much more effective work. That's why I think that, for example, feminism is going to save the world, because the old political ways of doing things the old sort of patriarchal models were based on, you know, who's got the bigger stick and can bam who over the head sooner. And you're coming out of anger and fear and distrust. And to me, feminism has always been this kind of politic that said, wait, first of all, we have to look inside. We have to change ourselves. We have to change who we are, how we feel about ourselves. We have to honor and respect and love ourselves. And then we have to extend that honor and respect and love to others around us. And eventually, it includes the world. It includes our feelings towards the planet, towards, you know, a compassionate, nurturing sense of not being one up and one down. And that, to me, is what is going to save this planet. You know, I was all nervous that it was some kind of weird religion, you know, and that I was going to go in and have to start worshiping something with 23 arms and 42 legs. Snakes coming out of their ears. It's not that at all. It's a way to teach you to get in touch with what you've already got inside. It's all yours, and it's just a matter of learning to open the door and see what's there more.
Again, from the 1981 concert, here's a song that Meg must have been singing in concert for a while, but it won't appear on an LP for another year after this performance, when she sings it at Carnegie Hall. It's called Train Song.
I need a break from the blues, and I need a break from the bad news, and the woman hating that's rolling over our land. So I come to sing with you again, and feel the comfort of my friends, feel us coming into our power, and coming into our beauty, and coming into our own. I went down to my friend's house. The trains go rolling by. You can hear them in the morning if you try. Well, I said, I'd like to catch one. She said, it can't be done, but can't you see us ride the rails in the morning sun? Now everybody's got to take a chance. Oh, sometimes, oh, sometimes. Now everybody's got to find romance. Oh, sometimes. Sometimes I sing that with me. Well, she said, I've seen them come and go, the wanderlust in their eyes. You can see them chase their hats when the train goes by. Oh, you can see them chase their hats when the train goes by. I can't hear you.
This world will never be the same. So I say, why don't we catch one? You say it can be done. And can't you see us ride the rails in the morning sun? Oh, you can see us ride those rails in the morning. What do you say?
you. I needed that.
Back to the interview, and Meg next responded to a question about the future of women's music companies.
I think, once again, it's going to be an individual thing. As it has been true for the past umpteen years, there have been some women in women's music. Well, as you said earlier, they don't even call their music women's music, but they have been within the women's music network. There are some women who only want to share their music specifically with other women or either with other lesbians. There are some women who would like to take their music any place in the universe that will listen to it. I used to have some real intolerant attitudes towards anyone who didn't want to do it exactly the same way I did. But I've come to understand that music is this powerful tool that can go out there and make change on all kinds of levels. So I feel like that what women's music wants to do is get more stable and more strong. And what Olivia wants to do is to figure out more creative ways to get out women's music, to express women's artistic visions. And you bet we want to get stable and that we want to make more money and that we want to figure out better ways of getting the music out there. For me, what it's not going to mean is changing my music. You know, that's a given for me. That's why I got involved in this in the first place, so I could put out my music honestly. I have a lot yet to find out about what's me musically. And my experimentation has nothing to do with what someone else wants to hear from me. It has to do with me opening up to what might feel good, what might make my music sound more interesting to me. I feel like that I have a long way to go. There are a lot of more possibilities that I can't even imagine.
I've got one more song to take us home in this segment of Queer Music Heritage. This is J.D. Doyle, and I thank you for joining me in my salute to the music of Meg Christian. I also thank Pokey Anderson for providing the interview tape and the Pacifica Archives for the concert recording. And as I described it as an hour-long concert, and I only played 4 of the 10 songs from it, you may feel a bit shortchanged. Don't worry, you can hear the entire concert on my website, queermusicheritage.com. And as this show's material was all from 1981 and 1983, what has happened to Meg since? Well, as part of her spiritual life, she's changed her first name to Shambhavi, and I hope I pronounced that right. And under that name, through the Siddha Yoga website, she's released 3 recordings of a more spiritual nature. She has resurfaced in recent years to participate in some Olivia events. Most of you probably know that Olivia is now at Cruise Lines, and Meg has participated in several of those and is scheduled, along with many former Olivia artists, for the 40th anniversary cruise in February of 2013. That will surely be a stellar event. I save for last, again from the 1981 concert, one of Meg's most beloved songs, Sweet Darling Woman.
We're going to do a song that that Diane wrote, and I swear it's one of the most beautiful songs in the history of the world.
Sweet darling, left behind, won't you try and see my state of mind? Loving you, I still can't run from you, sweet darling. Every day I spend
say the words, and I'll be by your side, oh sweet darling woman. We're here just to be satisfied. You know I need your touch to let you feel how much I am your sweet darling woman. Do you still
Lindsay. Thank you all.